When we think back at the Second Temple period, and we think about the idea of Sinat Chinam, so again, on one hand, you can look at the Sinat Chinam, the hatred in terms of individuals. On the other hand, there were various groups. And we don't know all that much about the groups, which means there's lots and lots of theories around, and the theories are modified every now and again. And there's an additional issue, and that is that there may be some historical information, but then there's also the perception of the rabbis as to what happened or the way that they choose to report it. So that's also something which is significant. And what we're going to do today is not, we're not having a class in history, so I'm not really concerned with history. I'm much more concerned with the theology. And the theology is the manner in which the rabbis decided to go to and explain things. But I do want to, at least as an introduction, to throw out, and this may be somewhat superficial, and it may even be wrong, but it's my perception, of a continuum which existed. And the continuum in terms of revelation, which means there were, you know, we start thinking about the different sects. So you had the Pharisees, which, by the way, if you read the New Testament, it's the bad guys. If you read the Gemara, it's the good guys. So that being that we come from the rabbinic tradition, we actually like the Pharisees. It's not an insult to call somebody a Pharisee over here. The Prushim. You have the Tzdukim, you have the Baitusim, you have the Issyim, and you have the early Christians. So you have these various groups, but I want to, as I said, talk about it, what I think is a continuum. The Tzdukim and the Baitusim, and that's another issue, what exactly is the line between them, or how different are they? I have some suspicions and suggestions, which perhaps if we get to, I'll make. But it's not all that clear. And again, this is the kind of thing the historians weren't all that clear about. They even went so far as to say that they were the same group, but one was, you'll like this, this will remind you of something, one was the political arm and the other was the religious arm of the same basic group. And that's the two different names. If I'm not mistaken, Gretz made that suggestion. But again, ultimately, we don't have all that much information. And a lot of the information is also confused. So when I say confused, for example, you can have a Gemara that in one source it says that was a Tzaduki who did this, and you can have another source that says that was a Baitusi who did the exact same thing. So there is a challenge to try to figure it out. But let me go back to my continuum. The Tzadukim and the Baitusim were very, very conservative. They were conservative to the sense that which they felt that the rabbis had no right to give new interpretations on things, and I think we would be mistaken, certainly in terms of the Tzedukim, but I think we would be mistaken to conflate them together with the Karaites and to say that they only believed in some kind of a literal interpretation. I think that it's not that they necessarily did not accept rabbinic traditions that had been passed on. Again, I'm talking about the Tzedukim right now. I think it's more that they felt that rabbis had no right to make new interpretations on things. And therefore, it was much more of a, as I said, a conservative-based approach. Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. Nothing new can be introduced, and therefore they kept older traditions. When you look at the Dead Sea sect, for example, and you look at some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, one of the things which really jumps out is that they seem to be that they still believe that there's some kind of revelation taking place. Which means, as far as Chazal are concerned, there's no longer any revelation, and the age of prophecy has ended. Most likely, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that says, make a siag for the Torah, vasyu siag la Torah, if you look in the Avot Rabbi Natan, the way that it understands that line, it seems to be suggesting that you need to make a canonization. Why canonization? Say, this is part of Kitvei HaKodesh, and this is not part of Kitvei HaKodesh. If there's no longer any prophecy anymore, then there's no longer new books. There's no longer new books. Now we can establish what exactly is considered to be part of the canon and what's not considered to be part of the canon. But then when you look at the Dead Sea Scrolls and you see that they're still having revelatory writings, so then you realize that they're not in sync with Chazal by claiming there's no more prophecy. For that matter, you can continue on. And again, I may be superficial right now, but you can continue on and look at the New Testament, where you have people claiming that, you know, there still comes some kind of revelation taking place, which therefore, at least in terms of this issue, would place early Christians much closer to the Dead Sea sect than it would to the Purushim, who were claiming that there's no longer any type of revelation. But now when you look at this continuum, you'll realize that you have those saying there still is a revelation. You have the rabbi saying there's no revelation, but we still know what God wants by using rules and tools of Torah Shebaal Peh. And then you have those who say, no, there's no more information that can be acquired. We need to be conservative. Whatever was done is what we do. And there's no more new information that can possibly be introduced in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. I mean, if you read the Dead Sea Scrolls, you get the sense, absolutely, they believe there was a revelation still.
By a prophet.
Not revelation. Yeah. You want to call it, as a professional, you can call it a psychotic episode. I mean, that's... I don't want to get technical. Don't give me any Hebrew words now. I said prophecy is what I'm talking about. Because Ruach HaKodesh is a meaningless term because it's been used by so many people in so many different ways, so it just doesn't mean all that much. Which means that you'll find many people today who'll say that Rashi wrote with Ruach HaKodesh. If you were to ask Rashi, did he write with Ruach HaKodesh, I think he'd look at you like you were crazy.
So it means I'm living
Kabbalah. No, so I'm saying you need to define your terms. You need to define your terms, what each thing means. I'm talking about Chazal say there's no longer prophecy. I'm talking about prophecy. What Ruach HaKodesh means, as I said. Now listen, if you ask me, I'll tell you. If you were to ask me, I'll tell you whatever I write is with Ruach HaKodesh.
That's not me.
I'll say it for very simple reasons. No. It's because of modesty. It's exactly. It's because I think that my writings are far better than I am. So I said, okay, so how did this happen? So you could say it's my wife, or you could say that it's...
If you believe that you're always receiving, then there is a contradiction in terms of what you're saying.
So that's why I'm saying, not a contradiction in terms. We need to define our terms. So to say that people have some kind of... a spiritual sense, after Bayit Sheni, still we have in the Gemara in various times we have something called a bat kol. So what's a bat kol compared to prophecy? So we need definitions. If you want, Masada Rav Kook had a sale this week. I don't know if it's still on. Probably ended today. There's a book there which is called Sheilot V'Tshuvot Min Hashamayim, Responsa from Heaven. It was written from one of the Balei HaTosfot. He'd go to sleep at night, he would have a dream, he'd write it in the morning, and he felt that God was communicating with him. The one who published this book is Reuven Margoliot, and he has a whole introduction there. What is Ruach HaKodesh? What is Nevuah? What is Bat Kol? All kinds of things there. That's your homework for next week. After you read it, I'll answer any questions you want. I don't know.
It's in English or
Hebrew? That's what I'm saying. We need to define our terms, and then we can discuss this a little more intelligently. But that's not what we're discussing today. There was a major fight that took place, which was so acrimonious. It's funny because to a very great extent we don't live with this anymore. Listen, we're the ones who survived. We get to write the history books. We get to say bad things about the other side, and. All of this discussion revolved around, as I said, one or two words. If it's one word, it's Shabbat. If it's two words, it's Mimachrat HaShabbat. Okay, so now at least you know where I'm going. In source number one, it says as follows. V'adaber Hashem Moshe le'mor d'ber b'nei Yisrov mart elehem mo'adei Hashem asher tekru ato mikrei kodesh elehem mo'adei. And over here we have a nice long list of various holidays. Of course, every time there's a list of holidays in the Torah, you need to pay attention. Which holidays are there? Which holidays are not there? Which holiday is not here in this list? Close. Rosh Chodesh is not there. Rosh Chodesh is not in this list. Okay. Whenever you have a list of holidays, you need to pay attention to what's here, what's not here, what sequence it takes, where it starts, where it ends. Over here, it actually starts in an interesting place. It gives a list of the Mo'adim, and then it says, where does it start? Sheshet yamim ta'aseh melacha, uv'yom hashvi'i shabbat shabbaton mikra kodesh, So you have the word Shabbat in some form three different times in this verse. This is one of a mo'ed would be a meeting place with God, both physically in terms of an ohel mo'ed and spiritually in terms of a day on the calendar. It's a time of having a rendezvous with God. Then it continues again. It sounds like it's starting all over again. So it already actually had a verse that said that almost word for word. Here are the times you can meet God. It tells you about Shabbat. And now it starts again. Where does it start? It starts with Pesach. B'chodesh harishon ba'arba'asar l'chodesh bein harbayim Pesach la'ashem. So the starting point, again, this is not the biggest surprise to us that Pesach should be the first one. We know that Nisan is the first month. It calls Nisan the first month, so the first holiday is Pesach. Uvachamisha sayom lechodesh zechag hamatzot lashem shivat yamim matzot techelu. Biyom arishon mikra kodesh yelachem kom alechat avodah lo ta'asu. Okay, it will be a day of rest. It then goes on offerings and so on. Pasuk yud. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta alehem ki tavo el haaretz. When you enter the land of Shani Noten Lachem, Uktzartem et Ktsira, Veveitem et Omer Reshit Ktsirchem El HaKohen. So it's interesting that when Shabbat was mentioned back in Pasuk Gimel, it says, Bechol Moshvotechem. Wherever it is that you will live, there is such a thing as Shabbat. Over here, when it starts to talk about, and this will be the Omer, of course, despite what most people would answer if you ask, even unfortunately most rabbis, certainly yeshiva students, what's the Omer? You know, I don't know what kind of answers you'll get from, oh, that's when Rabbi Akiva's students died, or so on. The Omer is an agricultural holiday. Now, by the way, this is really the beauty of Judaism, and we're going to get more into this as we continue. The various holidays have both historical or theological aspects to them, and they have agricultural aspects to them. Obviously, when we spend thousands of years cut off from the agricultural aspects of it, so then we connect more to the historical or to the theological. So therefore, for example, even though in no place in the entire Torah does it say that Chag HaShavuot is the day that we receive the Torah, it doesn't say it any place, and I believe we've discussed this before. Nonetheless, if you ask anybody what is the holiday of Shavuot, they'll say, oh, the holiday of Shavuot, that's the day that we got the Torah. But it just never says it. So am I doubting it? I'm not doubting it. Is it close enough? Yes, it's close enough. But if you ask the Torah what is the holiday of Shavuot, by the way, why is it called Shavuot? What does the word Shavuot mean? It's counting seven, but from what? It's counting from the Omer to the Bikurim. This is purely agricultural formulation. So let's read. When you get, now you understand why the starting point is when you get to the land. And by the way, another point which we've discussed in the past has been, did they actually count when they left Egypt till they got to Har Sinai? It's machloket rishonim, no evidence in the Torah that they did. Over here, actually, it talks about the counting only after you get to the land, which of course you can say is done in order to create a memorial for that first counting that was done that first year. I'm just saying again, but that first counting the first year is just not mentioned any place in the Torah itself. Again, when you get to the land of Shani Noten Lachem, Uktzartem et Ktsira, Veveitem et Omer, Reshit Ktsirchem el HaKohen. You're going to bring the first things which are cut from the field, you'll bring it off to the Kohen. V'nifet ha'omer, it's going to be lifted up and waved, l'fnei Hashem l'ritzonchem, mimacharat ha'shabbat yinifenu ha'kohen. When will this be done? It will be done mimacharat ha'shabbat. Now, here is the point that we had, or perhaps have, but I think it's more had, an argument between the rabbis and between the Baitusim. The Baitusim insisted that this is taken in what I would call a literal sense, or perhaps they would call a literal sense, and say it says mimachrat haShabbat. So therefore, this is something which must be done on a Saturday night. The rabbis, on the other hand, said no, that the Shabbat that's referencing is the holiday which came right beforehand, where we found that there was an Isur Melacha, and therefore this will be done at the same time that people out of Israel would have their second Seder. You just need to know more or less when it is. which of course at the end of the first day of Pesach is when we start to count the Omer. In those days, they just didn't start to count the Omer. They actually went out to the field, they did the cutting, and they brought it in, and they would then, you know, in the temple, the thing would be waived. Now, the Baitusim insist means Merchorat HaShabbat. It continues and says in Pasuk Tet Vav, Usfartem Lechem Merchorat HaShabbat, you can account from this starting point, Miyom Aviyachem Ata Omer Tnufa, Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot Tiena. You can account 7 Shabbatot. Ad Merchorat HaShabbat HaShvi'it, until you're going to get to the Merchorat HaShabbat, the 7th one. So they insisted it starts on a Saturday night and it ends on a Saturday night. They insisted, therefore, the holiday Shavuot will always be on a Sunday, and this is the way that it must be done. Now, there's always a question, also, this goes back to defining our terms. You know, when people say that, I want to explain something in terms of the pshat. So what does the word pshat mean? For our purposes, and again, it could very well be pshat for Rashi is not the same pshat as the Ramban, it is not the same pshat as the Ibn Ezra, and so on and so forth. Simple understanding is different. My understanding of what pshat is, and I'm saying this is a statement for me, I'd like to believe that Rashi would agree, or I'm explaining what Rashi really means. No, I wouldn't even go so far as to Rashi, but I'll say pshat, what I think the pshat is. Pshat is a contextual understanding of something. Pshat is not a literal understanding of something. Pshat is a contextual understanding of something. Ayin tachat ayin. Somebody insists an eye for an eye literally means you must knock out an eye, which would be a literal understanding. That's not a contextual understanding. Why? To get to a contextual understanding, you would need to do an analysis of what the word tachat means, and especially what it means within that same section in the Chumash. Which means if you see that, and by the way, this is a very good example. If you see in that same section of the Chumash the word tachat being used in various ways within that section and not necessarily meaning literally to do an action, but rather having a financial implication, so now you know that the word tachat does not necessarily mean in terms of pshat that you literally knock out somebody's eye, which again, literal interpretation versus a pshat interpretation are not the same thing. Obviously, whenever we're learning, the first thing, and by the way, we have a problem with language because a lot of us are learning with translation, but whenever you learn, the first thing you need to ask yourself is what is the literal translation? And the second thing you need to ask yourself, what is the pshat, which I'm now defining as what is the contextual translation? So over here, in this particular case, I could, again, want to be literal. I can write Mimachrat HaShabbat, I can say Saturday night. I can say that is the literal translation. But now, the question becomes, does Shabbat in this section, and I'm just starting this section, because the truth is, as far as Chazal were concerned, Chazal would say, well, let me look into the whole corpus. Let me look into the entire literature. Let me go so far into Navi and Ketuvah, and you're going to find that every now and then. And again, when they're looking to figure out what something means, they're going to look all over to see how words are used. I'm going to be much better than that right now. Why? Because I'm going to look how the word Shabbat is used in this same section. Because that's going to be, I think, much more instructive. Because that's going to tell me contextually what the particular word means. When I go down a couple of lines, as I said, the holidays continue. And we get up to Pasuk Kaf Gimel. V'dibar Shem Moshe le'mor, d'bel b'nei Yisrael le'mor, b'chodesh ha-shvi'i, b'chad l'chodesh, yelechem Shabbaton, zichron trua mikra kodesh. Over here, I have the term Shabbat being used regarding Rosh Hashanah, which by the way, so of course my Baitusi friends can say, correct, so Rosh Hashanah has to always come out on a Saturday. I'm fine with that, till I get to Pasuk Lamed Bet, which is referring to Yom Kippur. And there it says, Shabbat Shabbaton hu lachem. So, I don't know if all of you know this, but there are only 7 days in a week. And if you have a holiday which is described over here as the first day of the month, of the 7th month, another one is the 10th day of the month, and they're both described as Shabbat, you no longer can say that both of them are referring to Saturday. Okay? You can know, which means, again, when I'm going to insist then that Pshat is based upon a contextual understanding, looking at what we would call, to be technical, an operational definition of terms, how those terms are being used within the context over here, I now realize that the term Shabbat is not exclusively an indication of Saturday. Okay, that's what I see from this particular. Now, you can go into all kinds of discussions and theories and suggestions as much as you want right now. I'm not interested. And you could tell me all kinds of things. What maybe Shabbat means, Shabbaton means, Machorah Shabbat. All that's very interesting to me. But again, I'll say that the word Shabbaton indicates a cessation of work, and therefore it's absolutely fair to say Mechorah Shabbat, especially HaShabbat, which Shabbat are we talking about? Is it fair to say that referring all the way back to the Shabbat, what we call Shabbat Bereshit, or Saturday, that was mentioned at the very beginning, or is it talking about the closest Shabbat that was just now referenced, and that's Pesach, or really Chag HaMatzot, and that's what it's referring to. Just the way that it's written, the suggestion would seem to be it's actually referring to Pesach, which means it's not a simple point that over here, that the Baitusim are saying, well, we are reading the simple text over here, and the rabbis are being violent in their interpretation of the text. Quite the opposite. I would say in this particular case, the rabbis are telling you pshat, which is based upon the context, and the Baitusim over here have a position which I think, and I hope I'm being fair, I think is very difficult ultimately to defend. Yes. I'm telling you, I did the exact same thing when I read it. And then I looked again, I said, hold it, it's not there. Someone took it away. I looked at another Chumash, it wasn't there either. Okay. Yeah.
I agree with your interpretation, but I have a problem with the last sentence that you made, saying that we go back to the nearest Shabbat, because when it talks about the first day of Pesach, it doesn't use the word Shabbat.
Correct. And now I realize that wherever we have a cessation of work, Shabbat is a fair concept to use.
Okay.
Right. So, again, there was another step there, but agreed. The Mishnah in source number 2, Mishnah in Menachot, I actually learned this Mishnah, I learned this Gemara with Rabbi Soloveitchik. One year we learned Menachot. It was the year that I got engaged. And my wife's family had a friend of the family. He's no longer a friend of the family, but he was not because he died, but they're looking forward, or whatever. He's no longer a friend of the family. He's been holding out a get for like 25 years now. But he was a friend of the family then, and he saw himself as being a Talmud Chacham. He went to Yeshiva, I think he had Smicha, got out of the army, and he decided that he was going to test me. See, you know, what kind of Yeshiva Bacher is marrying, you know, his friend's family? So he says, what Gemara are you learning? So I said, Menachot. So he said, which perek, about tefillin? I said, no, about the Omer. End of discussion. No more questions. Never learned it. He didn't even know what to ask. So anyway, he was hoping Baba Metzia maybe, throw something out of Baba Kama. That was end of discussion. If it wouldn't have been for my learning Malchus, who knows if they would have let me marry her. Anyway. Then he picked up the newspaper. It was on Shabbos, the New York Times. He picked it up, and I said, you're allowed to read it? It's not Muksa? He goes, leave me alone. Anyway. Ketzad hayu osim, shluche beitin yotzimi erev yom tov, osinoto krichot b'muchobar lakarka, sheyeh noach l'kzor, v'chol yorad smuchot l'shem, kansot l'shem, kidei sheyeh niktzar be'esuk gadol. I mean, they made a big, big deal about it. At the end, it's, and then they would repeat, you know, I'll go into the mission if you never saw it, kevin shachashcha, when it got dark, Omer lehem, ba hashemesh, as the sun set, omrim hein, yes, ba hashemesh, omrim hein, yes, magal zu, right, is this a seeth, hein, set, scythe, yes, kupazu, omrim hein, kupazu, omrim hein, bishabbat, omer lehem, shabbat zu, again, it's right after the chag, but it could be that the seder was on a Thursday night, Friday, and now it's Friday night. And on Friday night, they would still do this, and they would say, is today Shabbat? And what was the answer, if it was Shabbat? Yes, hein, yes. Shabbat zo, is it Shabbat? Hein. Ektzor, should I cut? Right, so now what's the answer? You allowed to cut something from the ground on Shabbat? Ektzor, the heimum lo ktzor. Cut, go. Ektzor, the heimum lo ktzor. Shalosh pamim akol devar v'devar. Each thing was repeated 3 times. V'hein omer lo, hein, hein, hein. Yes, yes, yes. V'kol kach lama, why did they make such a big show out of this? V'pnei habaitusim, So here you have the Mishnah already telling you it's the Baitusim or the problem. They would say it's not done on the night after the Yom Tov. Rather, they would say it's always done on a Saturday night. Now, what's the problem? The problem is that occasionally, as I said before, the Seder can be on a Thursday night. If the Seder is on a Thursday night, so when would be Mechrat HaChag, which I'm saying maybe very well Mechrat HaShabbat, that could be on a Friday night. And what do you just learn in this Mishnah? You just now learned something unbelievable. And the Mishnah is saying they would do this anyway. If you look at the Mishnah in source number 4, you get the sense about how bad this argument went. Originally, you used to take testimony from anybody. But once the Baitusim messed up. Now, what happened over here? The Gemara over here goes on to tell us that the Baitusim used to, or at least on some occasions, at least on one occasion, they sent false witnesses to bear false witness as to when the new month was. If you look at Rashi in source number 5, Rashi tells us, Latot et achamim, they did this to fool the rabbis, She'ira yom shloshim shel adar b'shabbat, v'lo nir'e chodesh b'zmano, v'habaitusim mit'avim she'yom rishon shel pesach b'shabbat. And the baitusim mit'avim, what does the word mit'avim mean? Strongly, lusted would not be a good... They strongly desired that the first day of Pesach should itself be on Shabbat. Why? So then this Omer process would be done on a Saturday night. Kidei shetia hanafata Omer be'achad b'Shabbat ve'atzeret be'achad b'Shabbat. Is that this is something which they very strongly desired. Now, if I want to be a little bit unfair, and I've seen people take the direction I'm about to take, and I'll say something which is very nice, and you're going to like it. It's just not really true. But that should never stop us at all. As Rav Breuer used to say, there's Emet V'Yatziv, and there's Tov V'Yafeh, and there's 15 steps between them. So we're going to first do Tov V'Yafeh, and then we'll try to go afterwards to Emet V'Yatziv. The Baitusim, and the Tzedukim, for that matter, they were predominantly, if not exclusively, Kohanim. They were the Kohen class. And therefore, they were very, very interested in the protection of certain things in terms of the temple. In this particular case, as I said, I can now say a theory over here. There was something over here in the mission that we'd seen in Menachot, which was very surprising. What was the point that was surprised? That you would have said no when it says Shabbat, so yes. Should I cut? And you would have said, no, it's Shabbat, you don't cut. And what was it? No, it says, yes, cut, go ahead. Now, that's very, very surprising. So let's back up a step. We have a general principle that when it comes to the temple, when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan, certain laws of Shabbat are suspended in Shvut BaMikdash. Certain, I mean, you read through this whole section or other sections about the holidays. It says, bring this animal, slaughter this animal. You know that you're, again, one of the Lametet Melachot is you're not allowed to kill something. How in the world do they bring a korban? On Yom Kippur, for example, on Shabbat, do they bring a korban? Because the laws of Shabbat are suspended in the temple itself. So now we see something which is really, really quite impressive. What is it that we see? That the Baitusim seem to be of the opinion that the laws only apply to the temple itself. And by doing this whole procedure out in the field, what are the Purushim or Chazal, what are they insisting? They're insisting that the field, at least in this particular ceremony, also has a din, halacha, a status of the Beit HaMikdash or of a place which is holy. Now that is an absolutely incredible statement. Because now you're saying is that the holiness is, meaning again, the Baitusim seem to be telling you that no, you can't do this, you can't break Shabbat. And that's the whole problem over here. The whole problem is they do not want this to ever take place on a Shabbat. You can't break Shabbat. But rather, the holiness and the ability to break Shabbat is only within temple service, and they seem to be protective of this. Again, they're protecting their turf, as it were. Now, the implication of this is phenomenal, because what the rabbis seem to be saying is that the field itself is holy. You know, of course, what comes to mind with this. It comes to mind another big argument that took place a little more than 100 years ago. I just read a wonderful biography of Rav Kook from a friend of mine, somebody I went to yeshiva with years ago, Yehuda Mirsky, Rabbi Mirsky's grandson. He wrote a biography of Rav Kook. And, you know, one of the things that Rav Kook got into a fight with the old-time Jerusalem, I'll say it, no one should hear this, Hungarian rabbis, was they felt that the old yeshuv are the ones who are, that's where the holiness is. The old yeshuv is where all the holiness is. Okay, there's no longer a Beit HaMikdash, but it's in the old yeshuv, it's in the yeshivot, it's in the Batei Midrash, that's where the holiness is. And then you had these non-religious, again, these secular farmers, kibbutz workers, and so on, who are working the field, desecrating everything which is holy. And then Rav Kook gets up, and he gives these speeches, and he writes, and he says, these people are doing something holy. These people are redeeming the land. These people are working the holy land of Israel. They're doing holy work. So again, it's not exactly this argument which is taking place here, but you know what? It's not all that far from it either. So if Cook is looking at all the work in the land, is itself something which is holy, and they're saying, what are you talking about? How can you say that holy work is being done by these secular kibbutz workers? By the way, later on, Rav Kook then makes a very, very famous trip to various kibbutzim, and the head of the old yeshuv, Rav Sonnenfeld, goes with him. The two of them go together, and they visit the various kibbutzim, and again, there's much to be read and to learn by that, because that's something which is a little hard to imagine taking place today, even though there are a group of people who are trying to reestablish that same kind of meeting of the minds. Anyway, getting back to our Baitusim and our Purushim, now you realize that there's another issue over here. The Baitusim are saying that there's holiness only in the temple, and the Purushim are saying that there's holiness taking place in the field as well. So much so that even the field, when you get to the land, and this is really the first thing, you get to the land, this is the first agricultural law which is being mentioned, that the starting point there, the first thing, the Omer which is going to take place, this is something which is so holy that the laws of the Beit HaMikdash even apply to this particular field. Yeah.
Would that be every field, or the field adjoining the temple?
This goes on to say where they would do it, whatever, but there was one particular field, the first cut. So, but again, this is really, as I said, potentially radical statement. The problem is everything I just now said is not true. I said that's a problem. It's very nice, but it just doesn't happen to be... Because it's not, I'll tell you why it's not really true. It could be that's what the rabbi's position was, but it's not the Baitusim's position. No, let's hold off a second on the Baitusim. See, over here, what did we find about the Baitusim? We find that they did something which was radical. Again, to the extent of paying, it's the Gemara, I skipped the middle of it, paying witnesses to bear false witness, while when it came to the Tzedukim, we actually find that to a great extent it's more theoretical than practical. And we find this in a couple of different places. It could be because of political expediency, or it could be because that's the ideological position. For example, we have in source number 6, there's the whole thing in the Masechet Yoma regarding the Kohen Gadol and how he would be suspected of being a tzeduki because they really did control the temple. And the position was very often during Second Temple times bought and sold. So in source number 6, we're told that they would make him swear that he will do the work on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol will do the work on Yom Kippur in the proper way. Hu parishu bocha, he would then cry, shechashdu b'tzduki, that they were suspecting that he was a tzeduki. Vehein parishim bochim, and they would go be parish. By the way, also parushim over here, you see thrown in this text. They would cry, he would cry, v'kol kach lama, why? Shelo yitaken b'machutz, v'yikanes b'befnim. That they shouldn't prepare, the whole difference, by the way, was the ktoret. Do you prepare the ktoret and already make the smoke come out? Is it, you do everything inside, or you already do it outside? before you walk in. It's easier if you do it before you walk in, by the way. So, correct. So it says, Tana Rabbanan, Maaseh Betzduki Achad Shetikenu Machutz V'Chnis Lefnim. He once did it. B'Yitziyato, Ya Sameach Simcha Gdola. He was overjoyed that he actually got away with it. Pogabo Aviv Amar Lo B'ni. Afo Pish Tzdukamanu Mityariminu Min HaPurushim. We don't really do it. You know, we talk about it. We don't really do it. What's the matter with you? And for that matter, there's also a Gemara over here in source number 7 in Nida. It says, and just the part which is bold, it says, "Afal pi sheneshet tzedukim hay mityarot min aprushim umarot dam lechachamim," that the tzeduki wives would go and show the chachamim regarding any sort of blood which they had. They would go and ask shailot to the chachamim. So again, this is not the tzeduki practice is not something you really would have imagined. You would have said, "No, these are people that just the practice can be different." So as I said, there are a number of gemarot which lead me to the suspicion that the tzedukim, in terms of philosophy, are one particular way. But when it came down to it, I don't know how much they really felt this need to follow up on it, but I do find that the Baitusim are a little bit more militant. Let's just put it this way. Now.
We're less corrupt.
So, exactly, I don't know why. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I heard as the follow-up to that.
There's a continuation. Right? Correct. There's a continuation. Take a look at source number 11. Source number 11 is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. The Mishnah says, Antigonus ish socho, kibel mi Shimon HaTzadik. Antigonus ish socho received the tradition from Shimon HaTzadik. By the way, Shimon HaTzadik, does it have anything to do with San Simon or no? But isn't it funny that in San Simon there's a shul called Shimon HaTzadik? Okay. Yes. Anyway. Antigonus ish socha received the tradition from Shimon HaTzadik. Hu ya omer al tiyu ke avadim ha-mishamshin at arav amanat l'kabal pras. Don't serve God as somebody who's doing it in order to get a reward. Don't serve God in order to get the reward. Serve God without thinking about the reward. And that would be called by some people to be Oved Lishma. In Avot Rabbi Natan, it continues from here and says, why? Because if you be Oved Lishma, then you get even more schar, which is, you can work this out. This is very, which part? That it says that you should serve God not in order to get reward, but if you serve God not to get reward, you get more reward. Okay. Antigonus ish socho ayulu shnei tamidim sheyuhu shonim bedvarav yushonim letamidim v'tamidim letamidim. He had two students who then passed on his teachings to their students and their students and their students. Amdu v'diktaku achareihim, and they said, hold it a second, what did he say and why did he say it? V'amru maru'u avoteinu lo medavar zeh she'ef shar she'aseh po'oil melacha kol hayom v'lo yitol scharo arvit. Is it possible that a worker can work all day and not get paid afterward? Ela elu ilu hayu yodim avoteinu she'esh olam acher v'yesh tchiyat ha'meitim lo hayu omrim kach. The rabbis never would have said this had they known that there was an ultimate reward. Umdu upirshu min haTorah. Again, you have this word pirshu, which is again in the play on the prushim. They separate, meaning we're not the prushim. Pirshu min haTorah. They're the ones who separated from the Torah. V'nifritzu mihem shnei pirtzot. And two, how would you say pirtzot? How would you translate this? To what?
Two
breaks came up. Shnei pirtzot, tzukim ubaitusim. Tzukim al shum tzadok, ubaitusi al shem bitus. That means these were the names of two of the students of Antigonus ish socho. V'hayu mishtamshimin b'kli kesef v'kli zov kol yameihem. So now you just learned another thing about them that we did not know independently. Not only were they the Kohanim, they were the aristocracy. And part of their concern really was to protect what they had. Again, I'm going back again to the turf thing. They were protecting what they had. They followed their traditions, and they were not all that concerned what the rabbis had to say. Shiloi tada atan gasaleim elitz tukim omim misoratu biyad prushim shehin mitzarim atzman bolamaze ublamaba ein lehem klum. He says that they claimed that the Purushim know, they have a tradition that they torch themselves in this world and there's nothing waiting for them in the next world. By the way, to what extent this kind of philosophy, we may as well eat, drink, and be merry now, and so on, is connected to various forms of Greek philosophy, especially Epicurean philosophy, remains to be investigated. But there are certain elements over here. Now, going back to the Tzdukim, who would want to do the service, they would want to do the make the cloud outside instead of carrying it in. The Gemara over here in Source 13 tells us that was the most difficult thing in the avoda in the Beit HaMikdash. That was just in terms of the dexterity, it was very, very difficult. So they chose to take the way which was easier to do when they had no choice. They did it like, meaning, was this really one of ideology or is this one of convenience? When you juxtapose this with, you know, they served with gold and so on and so forth, one begins to suspect perhaps someone who's a little spoiled. But again, I think if for Tzaduki here, we're here right now, he would insist that it was actually ideologically motivated and not just based upon convenience. The Rambam has a radical interpretation of this Mishnah. I don't know, that means I'm questioning, I don't know how the Rambam's analysis would stand up historically, because he does conflate a couple of things together which probably should not be put together, but let's take a look and see what the Rambam says. V'hoyu l'zeh ha-chacham, who, Antigonus ish socho, shnei talmidim shem achad tzaduk v'shem ha-sheni baitus. V'ka'asher sham'u sh'amar zeh ha-mamar, yotzum l'fanova amar echad l'chaveiro, and so on. That's what we saw from Avot to Rabbi Natan, really. This is the Rambam explains the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. He says, "V'ein tikva klal ki lo evinu kavanato v'samach echad mihem yado chaveiro." They supported one another. V'yatzu min ha-klal v'hinichu ha-torah. So the Rambam is saying they completely abandoned Torah. Continue what the Rambam explains here, where it's underlined. Hitchabra le'echad kat echad ul'chaveru kat acheret v'karum ha'chachamim tzedukim u'baitusim. They then became sects, and they were known by the rabbis as tzedukim baitusim. V'kasher lo yuchalim l'kabetza kihilot, when they failed to gather together followers, they took then upon themselves a strategy. Lefi mashi higia lahem mina emuna shezot emuna hara'a tafrid hanikbatzim. I'm not sure what that is. Kol shkein shelo to kavetz nifradim natu la'amin adavar shelo yichlu lekazvan etzel ha'amon. Essentially, the Rambam is saying they were not able to tell the masses what they really believed. She'ilu hoyimotzim otam ipiem hayu hogim otam. They would have been killed had they told them what they really believed. Again, according to the Rambam, the Tzedukim and the Baitusim did not believe in anything. Did not believe in Torah Shebachtav, did not believe in Torah Shebaal Peh. They didn't believe in anything. Ratzalom or Divrei Torah, v'amar kol achad l'siyato, shehu mamin b'torah, v'chalak ala kabbalah. They told their followers, we believe in the Torah, but we just don't believe in the oral tradition. She'ein amitit. We don't believe the oral tradition is true. That they realize, and this is all a strategy as far as the Rambam is concerned, that if they tried to fight against the written Torah, there would be too much resistance, and they may even be killed. But if they tried to fight against the oral Torah, let's say, where does it say such a thing? You guys are making it up. So they felt that they could be followed, they'd be successful. Again, the whole thing was a strategy because ultimately the Rambam claims they did not believe in anything. No. The second, but I'm going to come back to the second. V'amnam bikshu dvarim ha-mukubalim el ktsat b'nei adam levad ume'az yatsu elu hakitot ra'ot v'yikru be'elu ha'artzot ratzalom ha-mitzrayim kara'im u'shmotam etzachamim tzlukim ha-baitusim. The Rambam just now claimed, not what I said before, He claims that the Karaites are basically the same as the Tzedukim and the Baitusim. By the way, he's also implying that the Karaites don't believe in anything. So again, so to what, once the Rambam's talking about a contemporary problem, then you just have to ask, to what extent is he giving an interpretation, or to what extent is he involved in polemics? As I'm not going there at all, but I do want to point something out, which I think is what the Rambam is saying. First of all, the timeline is interesting. What was the name of their teacher? You have to appreciate his name. His name is Antigonus. Antigonus is, I don't know if I have to tell you, this is a Greek name. The Rambam is implying that these people didn't believe in anything. So I'm just going to go one step further than what he's saying, but this is what I understand from this. These are basically the Hellenized Jews who had embraced Hellenism. What happened? The Maccabees won. So just because the Maccabees won didn't mean that now suddenly they started to believe again. Which means you have over here, again, you saw within the Avot Rabbi Natan some kind of a Greek philosophy being embraced. That Greek philosophy is because these are people during the Greek period who embrace Greek philosophy. Okay, the Maccabees won. So now what can they do? It didn't mean they just started believing the next day, but they knew on the one hand, if they go back to a total Greek perspective, they would be killed. They just couldn't do that. So instead, they took a strategy. What is the weakest link? Torah Shebaal Peh is a weaker link. It's not written black and white. So they felt if we attack Torah Shebaal Peh, then we can get away with it. But if we attack Torah Shebichtav, then we're putting ourselves in danger. So I said, according to the Rambam, it sounds like he's putting everyone together. He put the Tzedukim together, the Baitusim together, which again, I'm not that sure of when you look at the various Gemarot. And he's throwing the Karaites together, and I'm not sure about that either. Because again, a Tzduki Kohen Gadol, would he have done Shechita? Yes, he would have done Shechita. Shechita is based on Torah Shebaal Peh. For that matter, again, it may be a little unfair, but we do find with the Karaites a number of traditions which they do. By the way, I use the word tradition because it's very funny, because ultimately they also have traditions. But you find the Karaites rejecting Torah Shebaal Peh, certain things that that I think the Tzedukim would have accepted. Yeah. Right. Correct, which is always the interesting question once you challenge tradition, so what are you embracing, what are you not embracing? Correct, 100%. Now, here's my question. This is a very nice theory the Rambam's telling us, but where does he get it from? Okay, it's very nice. So, I want to show you a Gemara that I am completely convinced that had the Rambam been standing here, here is how he would have defended himself. Take a look back on page number 2, source number 3. Shayu Baitusim Omrim Atzeret Achar Shabbat. They claim that Atzeret always had to be on a Sunday. Why? I mean, Mechorta Shabbat means start on a Saturday night counting. 7 weeks later is going to be on a Saturday night. So therefore, the 50th day will be on a Saturday night. So therefore, he says, Shayu Baitusim Omer Matzeret Achar Shabbat. Nitpal Lehem Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, then he takes them to task. Vamar Lehem, and he says to them, Shotim, should I translate that literally? Or politically correct?
Idiots.
Minayin lachem. What do you? And by the way, I would assume that Rav Yochanan Zakkai knows everything that I told you in the beginning of the class. He knows the word Shabbat doesn't mean Saturday, and he can show it black and white. So he says to them, "What are you talking about?" V'lo haya adam echad shehaya mishivo. None of them wanted to engage him in debate. Chutz mizakin echad shehaya mitpatpet kinegdo. There was one old guy, and how would you translate mitpatpet? He started to, I was going to say, blap. What?
Chat.
It's worse than chat. Mitpatpet is babble. It goes with fool, right? Babbling fool. Right. It goes with the shota from before. Okay, good. He started to babble in front. So again, let's recognize this. That's right. We wrote the history. We won. So we write it as we want it. But he starts to babble. And listen to what he says. Mitpatpe kenegdo va'amar. Moshe Rabbeinu ohev Yisrael haya. Moshe loved the Jews. V'yodea sh'atzeret yom echadhu. And Moshe knew that Shavuot is only a one-day holiday. Sukkot is an 8-day holiday. Pesach is a seven-day holiday. Shavuot's a one-day holiday. Amad v'tikna achar Shabbat, and therefore Moshe decreed it should always take place on a Sunday, Kideshu Yisrael mit angin shnei yamim, that we can have a long weekend. And that is, by the way, this fits in very nicely what we saw from Avot Rabbi Natan, the gold and the whole idea we need to enjoy ourselves in this world, and so, and again, this underlying perhaps Greek philosophy. All of this you see over here, but there's something else. And by the way, and when I said before, no, they believed in the holiness of the temple and so on, there's no holiness of the temple over here. We want a long weekend. It's a shame. It's just a shame if Shavuot comes out of the middle of the week. We want a long weekend. So I'm saying, you'd be shocked. You know, if I would have told you this is what it was really about, you say, what are you talking about? So this is what Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai reports to us. This is what it's really about. But did you notice something else along the way here? By the way, you know what his answer is? Yochim Zakkai's answer is, well, if Moshe loved the Jews so much, then why did he wander around the desert with them for 40 years? You know, there are other ways of showing the love. But did you notice something? They claim that Moshe wrote the Torah. Right? We don't believe Moshe wrote the Torah. We actually believe that this is something dictated by God. B'machran HaShabbat is something dictated by God. This is not dictated by Moshe. So I am convinced if the Rambam were sitting here and we asked the Rambam, where do you get this? They didn't believe in Torah Shebichtav either. I think he would point to this Gemara and say, look, they don't believe in, it's not just the Torah Shel Peh they don't believe. It's not just the interpretation of Barachat HaShabbat. They're saying Moshe wrote it, and Moshe wrote this out of practical concerns. Moshe wanted to give us a nice weekend. So when I said before this Tov V'Yafeh and this Emet V'Yatziv, I think that this is really Emet V'Yatziv. Again, whether you're going to continue with the Rambam all the way to link this with the Karaites, that's a whole other part of what the Rambam is saying. But to say that essentially, at least the Baitusim, because again, the Rambam links the Tadukim, the Baitusim, and the Karaites, he says, let's get all the heretics and throw them into one barrel, right? That's as far as the Rambam is concerned. But the Tadukim, we found a couple of Gemaras that they themselves hesitate. Yeah, we think this, but they hesitate in terms of the practice. We find the Baitusim being a little bit more violent and a little bit more radical. We find them, you know, taking the law into their hands. Again, I told you that those who therefore claim this is the religious side, this is the political side. Nonetheless, when you find the defense, we're just so disappointed. And even though I wanted to give them much more credit and talk about, you know, how holy the temple is versus how holy the field is, I do want to end, as I said, you know, Yom HaTzmaut is coming, so I do want to end with one thing about the holiness of the field. In source number 18, there's a teaching of the Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer, as you know, I actually made an allusion to before, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, nothing new is allowed, and so on. And Chatam Sofer is probably one of the foremost authorities, which becomes the starting point for what we would call today Haredi ideology. The problem with me teaching this is the only thing you're going to remember for today, and you're going to forget everything else that I said, but it goes back to the holiness of the field. Shamati Mimori V'Rebi HaFla. He had two... 18. He had two primary teachers. One was Rav Nussan Adler, actually who pronounced his name Rav Natan Adler, and the other one was Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, who's known as the Hafla. They were both, oh, by the way, all three of the nice Jews from Frankfurt, Germany. You never even imagine that the leader of the Hungarian Jews, who Chatam Sofer began, was actually a Yekke from, when a Yekke goes bad, a Yekke goes bad. That's really what it is. Shemati Mimori, Shemati, I have a daughter-in-law. Shemati Mimori v'Rebbe Hafla, Zatzal, Bahad Pligi Rashbi v'Rebbe Yishmael, B'Rosh Perkeitz and B'Rochin, Maskin Arbei Asuk Rebbe Shimon B'Yochai, V'Lo Atubi Adam. So, if you remember, the Gemara is in Brachot, which is back there in source number 15. What's the right perspective? Rebbe Shimon B'Yochai says, you know, if a person works in the field and plants and plows and this and that, how is he ever going to get to learn? And it says that Rebbe Yishmael you know, take a look at 15 for a second. Tanu Rabbanan, Vasafta de Ganecha, Ma Talmud Lomer, Lefisha Nema, Vlemush Sefer Torah, Zemipicha, Yachel Dorvim Kichtavan, Talmud Lomer, Vasafta de Ganecha. In Hegber Minhag Derech Eretz, Divir Rabbi Yishmo, Rabbi Yishimu B'Yachai, Omer Efsha Adam Choresh B'Shat Charisha, V'Zareya B'Shat Zriya, they're going to plow and they're going to plant, V'Kotzer B'Shat Ktsira, V'Dash B'Shat Disha, V'Zareya B'Shat Haruach, Torah Mateh Ela, when are you going to ever get to learn if you're spending all your time in the field? Ela B'Zmanchi Yisrael, Sin Ritzon HaShemakom, Lachtam Naseh Ta'yidei Acherim. Other people can do it for you. Shenemar V'amdu Zarim V'Ra'ut Sonchem. If you don't follow the will of God, you got to do it yourself. You end up doing other people's work. Because Rabbi Yishmael says you got to work, and Rosh Hashanah says you don't have to work. A lot of people tried like Rabbi Yishmael to divide between working and learning, and it works. A lot of people tried like Rabbi Shimon B'Yochai, and it doesn't work. If you're Rabbi Shimon B'Yochai, then everything works miraculously. If you're not Rabbi Shimon B'Yochai, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. By the way, the Pachad Yitzchak, the early Pachad Yitzchak, claimed that this is Rabbi Shimon B'Yochai's position till he leaves the cave. And after he leaves the cave, he backs down from this. He eventually backs, he himself backs down. Anyway, let's go back to the Chatam Sofer. He says that I heard Behold the plegi Rashbi Rabbi Shmuel Rosh Perkeitz Mavrach and Maskin Harbe Asuk Rav Shmuel Chai Velo Alta Biyadam Amar Huzal She Asuk Rashbi Velo Rashbi Mamash. They did it like the Rashbi, but not Rashbi himself. Devade Misha Kavanato L'Shem Hashem Habochin Machshivotav Yodea Eshtonotav Bevadaya Lebiado Elahim Asuk Kirashbi Nidmalo Velo Beetzem Tochniotam Alkein Lo Alta Biyadam. He says people who do it like the Rashbi, it doesn't work. You need to be as holy as the Rashbi in order for it to work. Rashbi is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai again. Shirot L'dmot Atzman the Rashbi Ze Pasul Ki Lo Alta Biyado Alkein Divrei HaRav. He goes, this is what my rabbi said. Don't go on making yourself off to be like the Rashbi. You have to be as holy as him to be able to, should I say it or not say it, or leave it, I'll leave it as a hint. Let's continue. Mikan ve'elich tosefet divrei, right. Mikan ve'elich tosefet divrei talmido hapuat kimoni. He goes, this is what my rabbi said, and now his insignificant, small, little student wants to add a little bit. Nira lefi aniyadate, it seems to me. Rabbi Yishmol nami lo'om mikra v'asafta deganecha ela be'eret Yisrael. V'rov Yisrael shurim sh'avodah b'karka gufa mitzvah mishum yishuv eretz Yisrael u'lahotzi peruten hakdoshim v'al zed sifta Torah v'safta diganecha u'va'oz zorah gororin so on and so forth mishum mitzvah v'ke'elu tomar lo aniach tefillin b'nei sh'ani osek b'torah v'chinami lo emar lo e'asof digani b'fnei esek Torah v'efshar filu sh'arei umanatov sh'yesh b'hem yishuv ha'olam hakol b'chlal mitzvah. All work in Israel is considered to be holy work. Aval kishanan anu mifuzarim bavonot harabim bein umot haolam v'kol marbe haolam yishuv mosif avodat Hashem chorban moda Rabbi Yishmol l'rashbi v'al zeh anu somchim al ravnu, right, and so on. He's saying this concept of only learning, he says that's only a concept for chutz la'aretz. At the end, he says, "Mamash tahainu Rashbi v'cherev hamiti mikol makom hinlan v'halahu levnei bavil kashu v'nei Yisrael pasul debeinun yishuv eretz Yisrael al yidei Yisrael." And he says, it's not just planting and not just plowing. He says, anyone involved in work in the land of Israel is doing a mitzvah of yishuv eretz Yisrael. And that already, over here, he says that's holy. Which means what I said before, in terms of a possible understanding of the difference between the field being holy versus the Beit HaMikdash, of all people, do you expect the Chatam Sofer to come out and to say that the field is holy, working the field, and it's not just the field. Anything involved in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which means an application of this Chatam Sofer today, would be high-tech, and would be low-tech, and would be the bus driver, and the guy who should fix the water in Jerusalem today. All of this is included in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and everything he says is not just that it's allowed to be done. This is the idea of, no, it's holy work. It's kadosh. This is holy work. And he goes, therefore, if people want to sit and learn, he says, that's wonderful. do that in Chutz La'aretz. By the way, now we have now the world is backwards. All the religious Jews, right, the Haredi Jews in Chutz La'aretz, so they work, and over here in Israel they don't work. He says, no. You are certainly able to put this in the Ma'ariv. Yes? What did I skip?
And get shot.
Correct. Those who only teach their children Torah, the Chtam Sofer, is saying that's a terrible thing. But again, you just added in this other element. Again, Abba, I want you to work into Erloi and show this from the Chtam Sofer and ask them if they follow this. Everybody have a good Shabbos and enjoy your Yom HaAtzmaut.